welcome to the podcast that takes a light-hearted look at lesser-known London stories with your own personal blue badge professional tourist guides.
She's Fiona.
And she's Alex.
And this is the Ladies Who London podcast. Hello, Pod Squad. It's Alex here coming to say hi. Happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of the Ladies Who London podcast. It's just me saying hi at the start this morning, but don't worry, once we get into the episode, there's both of us having a lovely little chat in there. But times being what they are, it's busy and Fiona is busying, beavering away around the city doing her own thing. So it's just me to give you a little hello. We have a little shout out. We mentioned a few weeks back that if you wanted any shout outs, get them in nice and early. And we have one this week, which rather sweetly is slightly linked. Well, it's not completely linked, but slightly reversal of what we had a few weeks ago. This is from Lauren Adams. And Lauren says, good afternoon, Alex and Fiona. I was lucky enough to get a happy birthday from you ladies on the 17th of March. Now I'm hoping you'll wish my daughter Alice a happy birthday on Wednesday the 8th of May, which is, amazingly, the day that this actually goes out. So that rarely happens. So well done, yay. We lived in London last year and loved every minute and had such fun stumbling across things we learned about on the pod, listening every week, and hopefully can't wait to get back in London. Well, happy, happy birthday to Alice. I'm loving this mother-daughter shout-out situation coming on the podcast. This is dedication. I really enjoy it. Well, not much news from me this week. It's all been chugging along much as ever. It's busy and things are hotting up and the weather's getting better, so I'm very happy about all of that. But before we get into the podcast proper, we have the small matter of the podcast pedestal to clear up. Now Fiona has given it to me in an envelope because obviously she's not here today. So I am going to do my best opening on air of an envelope to see what the results are. So here we go. Okay. So, it's another fairly close one. Just to remind you, last week it was the Montagues. I mean, what a completely mad episode that was. Completely bonkers. But we had Ewan Montague and Gladys Montague. Ewan, which was my pick, got 43%, which means Fiona got 56%. She is off the blocks, people. She is off the blocks. It's 2-1 to me. Fiona has scored her first go at the podcast pedestal. Hooray! But without much further ado, let's get straight into this week's episode. We'll see you on the flip side. Right, gang, this week I am bringing to you the perfect story. Ooh. Because this is a story of rags to riches, of love, of loss, of beauty and fame and power and cheating and war and illegitimate children. And
nah, I'm not in that. Sounds dull.
No, nah, Christopher Wren, off we go.
No, I'm in. All ears.
Now, based on that, can you tell who I'm going to talk about this week?
No.
She's looking confused, gang.
I'm also trying to work out, because you have mentioned, before we got started, you mentioned two place names.
Yes.
And so that, I'm also like, well, so I mentioned
we were just having a preamble chat beforehand, gang, and I mentioned two places, Pinner in North London and Wimbledon. Nothing from that. Okay. It's the story of the person who is known as the greatest mistress in history.
Oh.
Any
not
clues?
By me, she's not. Well, it can't be Kitty Fisher, because
no.
You've done her before.
Yep. She's not really a mistress. She's more of a courtesan.
Yeah. Okay. So someone who is one person's... Emma Hamilton?
Yes,
she's
follow
a
that
famous
thought
mistress.
Train. This is Yay. It. We're talking about Emma Hamilton. Now, this is the thing. She is known as the world's famous mistress, but there is so much more to her. And I'm pretty sure I covered her on Global Tea Break back in the day. But we haven't talked about her in the podcast. I'm pretty sure I did do a cursory check in case my brain was playing tricks on me, which is not uncommon, and we haven't. So I am talking about Emma Hamilton today. So people think that they know that she was the mistress to Lord Nelson, which she was.
Yeah.
but that's kind of all they know, that, you know, she's known as this sort of almost temptress, the fallen woman, the marriage wrecker, but also very glamorous and sexy, and, you know, this sort of, I don't know, this woman who lured the heroic and perfect Lord Nelson away,
yeah,
and all of that, and that is just not.
And do you know, but it's also weird that, like, the idea of her as, I don't think of her as being this amazingly sexy person.
Do you not?
Purely because of her era, which is those very prim little kind of dresses, the high waisted, long, like Jane Austen
Fiona,
type dresses,
sweet.
And I just, it doesn't make me think sexy, that
all
type
right.
of dress.
Well, let's see if you change your mind about this, because
I'm willing to accept
she
I'm
was
entirely wrong.
Incredibly sexy. Now, so we know her as Emma Hamilton, right? That is not what she is born at all. Not even her first name. She is born Amy Lyons in 1765 to Mary and Henry Lyon. Very, very, and I say rags to riches story. It absolutely is. She's in a very I say normal, probably pretty poor household. Her father was the colliery blacksmith, and then she's born into a mining village in Cheshire, the mining village of Ness, which, as I understand it today, is pretty well healed. And, you know, it's that classic thing of all of these mining villages, mining houses that were, you know, when the mines closed down, etc. Now they've all been sold off and they're all sought after residences and this, that, well, not all of them, but, you know, but this particular mining village, it was literally one of those towns that was, or villages that was created as a sort of service town, really, for the colliery. So of course, when the mines close, etc., they're not used anymore, but it's apparently very well healed now. Her father died very shortly after she was born, and there was a little bit of mystery around his death. They don't quite know what happened with his death, and this affected her mother, like, in a huge way. But there's some suggestion that maybe her mum's reputation was a little bit tainted by this. I don't quite know exactly why, but it affected her an awful lot, to the point where she went back to live with her mother. There's a lady called Sarah Kidd, who's over in Wales,
right?
And Sarah, her mother's no, hang on, sorry, not Sarah's father. Emma's mother's father, I guess that's right.
Yep. Emma's grandfather.
Emma's grandfather had also died in a mining accident a couple of years before Emma was born. So there's you know, there's mystery repeating itself. Sarah Kidd was originally from Lancashire, so Emma grew up with the Lancastrian accent, which I think is quite funny because we don't always think about her like that. Whether or not that changed in later life, I suspect it did. But there we go. Now, she moved to London when she was 12, which is incredibly young. But realistically, there was this, you know, if you wanted to try and make a go of something, London, streets paved with gold and all of that. And it does sound like an easy thing to do. Just, you move to London.
Yeah.
But realistically, from where they were living, it would have been just shy of 2 weeks on the back of a cart.
Yeah.
And during this journey, you know, you had a lot of young ladies who would be brought from the countryside to London just as they did, to get work as a maid, a seamstress, whatever.
Yeah,
and a lot of them would be picked off en route by brothel owners.
Okay.
Which she amazingly managed to not do.
Did she have family here or?
No.
No. So she came on her own?
Yeah, she came on her own. Yeah. She took a job. She did get a job as a maid in London, but she was sacked, and that was quite common in this period, because the mistresses could fire you over the tiniest thing. You know, they didn't like the look of your face, or your shoes were grubby, or whatever. They could fire you.
Yeah.
Was, you know, and she got work as a dancer. Now, this is where
the legend
back
begins.
A little bit. Well. She gets a job as a dancer at the Temple of Health in St. James. So this is the home of James Graham in his celestial bed.
Yes. Yes.
Which is an episode from a long time ago. One of my favourites that Emily did. Just bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. The celestial bed. I love it.
Yeah.
Or did I do it? I don't remember. Well, one of us did either way. And this is where she'd be dressed in classical robes, sort of diaphanous, big kind of floaty things. And she'd sort of waft around and hand out drinks and hand out this sort of quack remedies that James Graham was peddling and all this sort of stuff. And at the age of only 14, it's believed she got work as a dancer in a pretty high class brothel. So the Temple of Health is where she starts to go from sort of lowly level to more high profile courtesan kind of levels. Mm-hmm. So she gets this job in this high class brothel. And a lot of people, you know, talk or sort of denigrate Emma Hamilton by going, oh, well, she was, you know, she was a sex worker, etc. We have no evidence that she actually was a sex worker. And even if she was, firstly, you know, no shame in it.
It's a job. Like, it's
one in five women in London thing. In that era were in the sex industry. And also she wasn't in it for very long either. It was some place near Piccadilly. Mm-hmm. And it was so high profile as a brothel that they would publish a portrait of every new employee that they got in Town and Country magazine. Which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And so a portrait was published of Miss Lyon, who is, will become Emma Hamilton, Amy Lyons at the time. So good thing about getting a job here is that you are in front of the right people, the right men,
yep.
who are aristocratic, the upper echelons, all of that. And what they can then do is one of these rich men will pick you out as a mistress.
Yep.
And while that might not sound great, I mean, we know, of course, Kitty Fisher had a very good line in being a high-end mistress and courtesan. But for a lot of women, this is kind of one of the only good options, really. Emma is very witty and very beautiful as well. And she knows that this is her currency. This is going to be her path to better things. I've just seen a mosquito. It's the 1st of May. How is there a mosquito in my house already? Hang on. I'm going to go on a destruction mission. Stay there. Oh, you. That did not go well. Oh, you. Absolutely right. Okay.
I like that we say, how can there be one already? Like, we never used to have mosquitoes at all. So.
Anyway. Mm. Oh, there's two of them. Oh, the devil. Hang on. Got him. Right. You watch. I'm going to end up forgetting to cut that out now. Where was I?
Her currency. Her currency. Witty.
Yes. Witty. Very witty. Witty and pretty.
Yeah. Good witty combo.
Good combo. Very good combo. Not that I would understand that, but anyway. So she, as well as knowing that that's what's going to get her out.
Can I just say, as a Lancastrian, and already from this story, I think she might also be gritty.
Gritty?
Witty, pretty, and gritty. That's
the trifecta, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the surefire way to make yourself...
succeed in life.
Yeah, succeed in life, absolutely. She educated herself. She realised that education was the way forward.
Yep.
So she educated herself. And it really does seem like she has kind of figured out that her route to success is to be constantly evolving. You've got to change, you've got to morph into whatever people want you to be, almost be like a bit of an enigma.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not going to just stay as one thing. She's going to evolve, she's going to develop, and she's going to make the best of things that way. That's how she's going to make it work. So she's at this high-class brothel. She's looking out for a rich keeper, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And at 16, this does happen. And a chap called Sir Harry... Well, now, this is another brilliant English name.
Okay.
Written Featherstone Howe, but pronounced Fanshawe. Honestly.
Wasn't there... There was a dance troupe for a while that was Fanshawes and the Chumleys.
Really?
And it was just the two, the Cholmondeleys and the Featherstone, whatever they are. Yeah.
I like that. That's got to confuse a few people, isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyway, this Fanshawe chap says, yeah, I'll take one as a mistress. He's 26, she's 60, possibly even 15, actually. And he moves her to his estate. Now, in order to do this, I should say his estate is now a National Trust property.
Uh-huh.
It's called... Uppock House. Yeah, Uppock House. It's in Sussex somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I completely forgot the name. Uppock. So
Uppock.
Or Up Park, basically. Up Park, okay. House. Yeah. All in one word, Uppock House.
Yeah.
And in order to do this, he had to pay a lot of money. Basically, you know, like, you know what footballers want to transfer to another club and that club has to buy out their contract? This is sort of what happens here. He has to buy out a contract,
from the brothel, kind of. Yeah.
You know, pay them to because
she's got to be pretty popular.
Lots of earnings or whatever.
Yeah, all of that.
Yeah.
Now, when she gets to Uppock House, he gives her own suite of rooms, and she's never even had a room to herself, let alone a whole suite of them. And he takes her riding. He introduces her to society. He allows her to kind of carry on teaching herself. He takes her to parties. Now, it turns out that she absolutely loves a party. And this will be evident throughout the entirety of her life. She loves a party, a good old knees up. And she is, by all accounts, you know, the life and soul as well.
Yeah.
So that works really well. And she seizes this opportunity and takes all of the possibilities that she can get for development, which are presented to her. So she's able to learn music and other languages and learn riding and shooting and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then she falls pregnant. Now, when this happens, because bear in mind she is but a mistress,
yes.
Fanshawe, Featherstone Howe, disowns her.
Do we know he's not married or he is married?
I don't know, actually.
Okay. I mean, it might, sure. You know, it might not be clear. Critical either
26
way. 26
could go either way, really.
Yeah. Okay.
If not married, then expected to marry at the very least.
And not to not marry her. That's clearly plain.
Oh, yeah.
Plain.
Yeah.
No, that's
she's
never
not
gonna happen.
From
no.
Blue Bud at all. No, absolutely
no.
Not.
Okay. Sorry, I interrupted.
He kicks her out, basically. He's like, nah, okay. Not having any of it. So Emma, really quite distraught. Now, so Fanshawe is the first of several very underwhelming men that are going to come into her life. And grant me strength. Okay.
Yeah.
Because she writes to one of his friends that she's met on hunting trips, which is a guy called Charles Greville, and he does not get any better than Fanshawe. I'm going to tell you right now, spoiler alert.
Yep.
I've seen him referred to as quiet and gentle, but more often I've seen him referred to as dull.
Right.
And he's in his early 30s. He hasn't married, and by all accounts, if she weren't pregnant, there's not a hope he would ever get her.
Yeah. This doesn't that sound like a good match.
No.
Needs must.
So she writes to him and she said, look, we've met on hunting trips. I know that you're a good man. Please, 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 please take me in.
Yeah.
And he does with conditions.
Right.
He says, as long as she repents her ways. Now, this is that classic thing, isn't it? Of, you know, the fallen woman doesn't become a fallen woman on her own.
Yeah.
And, you know, she doesn't repent her ways.
If he's taking her in, is he not saying, like, but carry on doing it? Whatever situation, or in what basis does he take her in?
Now, he also says that he'll take her in, but once the baby's born, the baby's gone.
Right.
She's got to go.
Okay.
And so Emma doesn't really have a choice, so she agrees to this. And when she gets there, he is very controlling and he doesn't let her meet with anyone else.
Right.
Once she has the baby, he sends the baby off to live with Emma's grandmother and then she's sent off to foster parents.
Mm-hmm.
And really sadly, Emma never gets permission for her to come and live with her again. So that's kind of it, really. What this chap Greville then does, let's not think for a minute that this is all done in a really philanthropic manner of him going, yeah, you know, she's fallen, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
She's pregnant out of wedlock. I'm going to give her another chance. This is not at all. He sees her. She's, you know, been very, very popular in this house, in the brothel. And he sees her and gets dollar signs in his eyes.
Right.
And the only person he does allow her to meet is a guy called George Romney, who's an artist.
Yeah.
Now, this is where we know what Emma Hamilton looks like, because George Romney paints over 60 portraits of her.
Yeah.
And this makes her really famous because, so when you said you don't really think of her as sexy, those pictures that he does of her, a lot of them are, they're breaking the norms of what portraiture does. So normal portraits are either, you know, a person or a couple or a family standing there pretty stiffly, you know, looking haughty and what have you, or the other way, it's nudes and sort of mythological creatures and this, that and the other.
Yeah.
But if they are nude women, or women generally, they are not looking out of the painting. They are looking across at somebody else, away from you. It's all very coy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But what she's doing is she is wearing very diaphanous dresses. So there's a, you know, there's a hint of sexuality and there's a hint of, oh, here's my body and all that. But she's looking at you in a lot of them. And this is incredibly alluring.
Yeah.
So this makes her really famous. And people start to buy copies of the paintings and drawings. And she, like, her star is in the ascendance. This is, this, well, I'm calling it a relationship. I don't mean a, you know, I mean a platonic relationship, but with Romney is what just cast her into the stratosphere.
Yeah.
Up until then, she'd probably, you know, big fish, small pond kind of situation. But now, you know, she's your girl on the garage wall type level. You know, Kitty Fisher level. This is what we're talking.
Yeah.
And Greville is pretty peeved with all of this. Now, the plan for him really was that Romney would paint all these paintings and then he and Romney would sort of split the profits.
Right.
But all of a sudden, he's got the profits coming in, but he doesn't want a famous wife. I mean, she's not married to him, but he's not going to take her as a wife.
No.
So he doesn't want that. Because I think the plan was vaguely that he might sort of marry her at some point. He doesn't want that. So he's never going to marry her. He doesn't want the notoriety. He doesn't want the people looking at him. So he's like, actually, do you know what? Stuff this. I'm going to have to marry into money. I'm going to have to do the old school way. And he decides he's got to get rid of her. Now, she is constantly hoping that if she is useful enough to him. And I should say, like, when the baby's born, all he wants to do is to get her to lose the baby weight and restrict her diet.
Okay.
Because all he wants to do is for Romney to get painting again.
Yeah.
All he wants. And she does bend his will and she does what he wants in the hope that he'll marry her and she'll get a child back and all of this, but that never happens. So Greville does something absolutely despicable. Absolutely despicable.
Yeah.
What he does is he decides he's going to get rid of her, but he's not going to tell her. So he sends her off to his uncle, a chap called Sir William Hamilton. Now, this is partly to get rid of her, partly to occupy his uncle. His uncle's wife had recently died. He hadn't had kids. And what Greville didn't want is for his uncle, William Hamilton, to meet somebody else, have kids, and then Greville isn't going to get his fortune.
Right.
So this is not, by any stretch of the imagination, philanthropic.
No.
Yeah. So he writes to Hamilton and persuades him to take her. Hamilton's in his 60s. By this point, Emma is maybe 17, 18, really, you know, so massive age discrepancy here. Greville sends her over to Naples, which is where William is ambassador. And he says to her, it's a holiday.
Have
a great time. Go to my uncle. Go enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, eat at the pasta, all of that. And then once she's there, he writes to her and says, you won't be coming back. And that she's to be William's mistress. And she is heartbroken. Absolutely devastated.
And presumably also furious.
I would imagine.
You know.
I would imagine, yeah.
Do we know anything? Do we have any like letters from her or things that she wrote? Or
I don't know.
Piecing this together from circumstances.
I don't know. We may well. I don't know. I haven't really delved into letters particularly, but I'm sure there's something. I mean, at the very least, her conversations with William Hamilton and probably Nelson later.
Yeah.
And all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, this is where we get a pretty decent guy in her life. So, William Hamilton.
Hooray!
Yeah. He is not a bad guy.
Yeah.
He really is. I mean, he's gone along with this Greville plot. Fine, whatever. But he's, you know, he's a decent guy. He's quite busy. He's the ambassador in Naples, so he's got a very busy diary. He's in very high social circles. She's also kept busy. He's got a lot. I mean, because he's the ambassador of Naples, and this used to happen a bit when my dad's in the military, if somebody comes to visit, you also play host. So you do all the kind of dinners and trips out, all that sort of stuff. So that's what he does. And Emma later gets involved in that as well.
Yep.
He doesn't want anything from her. He doesn't say, I mean, because so Greville basically says, you're in his bed now. William's not that bothered about that. He's like, look, I'm going to treat you like my favourite niece.
Aww.
Which is lovely. And he takes her out and treats her really nicely. He allows her to kind of carry on with her education and she learns stuff. He allows her to follow her hobbies and he throws huge parties, which she adores. Aww. And he allows her to party and gradually, bit by bit, they get closer.
Yeah.
And she becomes his mistress.
Okay.
He has her educated. She learns Italian and French, music and singing. And she was so good that she even got paid singing gigs.
Wow.
As well.
Yeah.
And he, part of this hosting for all the people that were coming through. So if you think this is the time when the Grand Tour of Europe is going on.
Yes. So where are we now? Late 17?
Would be going to be 17 no say late 1780s.
Okay. Yep.
No, later than that. 1780s or 1790s, I think.
Yeah.
That's where we're at now.
Yep.
So all of these grand tour guys, and of course all those grand tour guys, they're aristocrats, right?
Yeah.
They're boys from money, so they want a party. So they host dinner parties and all this sort of stuff. And she, while they're having these dinner parties and parties, she treats his guests to shows of dancing.
Yeah.
She's got this classical style from her background in dancing at the Temple of Health and modelling for George Romney and all of this. And people love her.
Yeah.
And she starts fashion trends.
And I've just remembered that thing about that dress that I was thinking of, that actually that's down to her, that dress. Yeah. Isn't it? Because she's doing these, the dancing in the classical attire.
Exactly.
And then classical attire takes off for everyone else. So
the Emma Hamilton is the Rachel's haircut, Rachel Reverend's haircut of the day. I mean, it's that kind of, everybody wants to be with her, know her, look like her. And with all of these portraits floating around, you've got easy access that you can sort of model yourself on her, really. And she really wants William to marry her. Being a mistress isn't great for her future prospects. And they sort of fall in love. And they do get married. She's 24, he's in his early 60s. She becomes Lady Hamilton.
Very
now,
nice.
After marriage, this opens her up to be presented at court. So we have gone, seriously, from a poor mining family to being friends with Queen Maria Carolina, who's the wife of King Ferdinand.
Yeah.
And Emma even possibly acts as a British spy by intercepting letters from Ferdinand to his brother, King Charles of Spain, as they head into war.
Ah, cool.
So she is at court. She's friends with Queen Maria Carolina for many years. They, you know, converse with it in letter. They're really good buddies. They get really, really close.
Yeah.
And then into her life comes one Horatio Nelson. And they meet for the first time at the house of the Queen. He's been injured in battle, and Emma kind of helps to nurse him back to health. They get on really well. They stay in touch. And then Emma convinces the Queen to release supplies to Nelson during a battle against Napoleon, which when Nelson goes on to win the Battle of the Nile. This instant hero status, absolutely wonderful. And she had planned to meet him when he returned to Naples.
No.
And we'll pick that story up after this. So, Emma is waiting to meet him when he comes back from Naples. And his ship arrives, and she went on board. And I should say at this point, Emma is tall and quite busty by the sounds of it as well. So she's wearing these floating diaphanous gowns.
Mm-hmm.
And by this point, it's become clear to everybody that the pair of them have sort of fallen in love. They've only met once, but the connection is clear.
Yep.
And she supposedly runs across the deck towards him. And she cries, "Oh God, is it possible?" And she faints directly on top of him. Now, bearing in mind that she's quite tall and quite buxom, and he's not the tallest of guys.
No.
By all accounts, she just completely flattens him. Which I just love
and
that.
By then, maybe he hasn't got both arms to catch her with either. I can't remember when the arm
good
goes.
Good question.
Anyway,
when the arm comes off. Yeah. Maybe one eye. Certainly only one eye to see her come in by this point, I suppose.
Yeah. One eye's enough, clearly.
Very quickly, they fall in love, and they both go on to say that they are each other's soulmates, which I think is really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there's a slight issue. Well, there's two slight issues. Issue number one, Emma's married to William.
Yep.
Emma and Napoleon? Oh my God, Nelson. that was a brain fart. They are absolutely inseparable. And William doesn't actually seem to mind. He allows Nelson to move in with him and Emma in Naples, which is scandalous.
Yes.
Because I always say this to people, you have a mistress, but you don't talk about them, and you certainly don't move in with
them,
the mistress
and
their husband. But this seems to work for them. And they even give themselves a name. They call themselves the Trio Junta in Uno, three joined as one.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you think he puts up with that?
Hamilton.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Hamilton. Yeah.
Well, I guess I've always thought that he is sensible enough to know that, like, either like Emma's not going to choose him, of the two. So either they stay and be a threesome or whatever, or, I mean, not necessarily being a threesome, that's a different story, possibly, but, or Emma will go off with Nelson.
Yeah.
So it may be either that he likes, you know, he likes having her around, he likes having her as a wife and doing the rest of it enough to not mind. Yeah.
And I wonder as well if, you know, he's significantly older than her.
Yeah.
Whether he's like, look, I'm not going to be around forever.
Yeah.
I'm already mid-60s. Back in those days, you know, that's a pretty decent age.
Yeah.
She's early 20s. I'm not going to be around forever. I might as well.
How old's Nelson by now? He's closer to Emma, isn't he? But he's probably older than Emma, but not, but much, much closer than Hamilton.
Yeah, because how old was he when he died?
I don't know.
Okay. We'll find out.
Yeah.
Look that up. Yeah, I'm also wondering as well, because
born, if you think, 1758.
So he's about 10 years older than her, give or take.
Yeah.
I also wonder if, you know, Naples is kind of in the hot zone for the war against Napoleon. And what you don't really want is for Nelson to be like, all right, ta-ra, and then naffing off around back home. Because if anything kicks off, it's going to take an awfully long time for him to get there. So you sort of want to keep him around.
Yeah.
Because Napoleon's breathing down their necks.
Yeah. So he might,
political move.
What, for the good of the nation and the country and the war effort and things.
Take one for the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder whether, as well, there's a certain glamour in hanging out with the big naval
certainly.
Hero as well.
You know,
it's
naval hero and the sort of the it girl of the day. Which that now it got reduces her a little bit, but you know the headline article of the day in Emma. Yeah, I mean,
kind of,
it's probably a lot of fun.
Princess Diana-ish status, you know. I mean, not royal, but that similar trend setting fashion icon.
Yeah, loved by the people, all that kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah.
So it's got to be a lot of fun, whichever way you slice it.
Yep.
Who wouldn't want to stick around for that? Problem number two. Nelson's also married. His wife Fanny, or Frances, and Fanny really gets the rum deal in all of this. She is back in the UK, cold and rainy, not like lovely Naples. No nice pasta on the table there, and she just will not grant me divorce. She's like, nope, sorry, mate, never happens.
And I've always got the impression that they were happy together.
Have you? I haven't
before.
Before, I always felt like it was a marriage of convenience.
Did you? Oh, okay, that's intriguing. I mean, I don't know whether I'm basing this on any facts or just...
Well, same.
Yeah.
The sense I always got was that as he was rising up the ranks, they sort of went, you've sort of got to get married, mate. You're kind of heading up the ranks. You've got to do the respectable thing.
Okay.
And he just sort of picked someone. I might be completely wrong in that. That might be
I think there was
going off on a piece.
There was one time when they went for dinner at the Admiralty, and he went twice to the Admiralty, one with her and one with Emma. And I think the first time he goes with Fanny, he's incredibly attentive to her. And people say, oh, he's so sweet and lovely to her. And he's been like, you know, she drops her napkin and he picks it up. And it's all very kind of, but who knows whether that's
maybe
indicative.
Okay.
I don't know.
I've not heard that story. That puts a different shine on things. Well, either way. By the way, she's not happy for a divorce. So there you go.
Okay.
Naples gets a little bit hot.
Mm-hmm.
The French Revolution kicks off a little bit of unrest in Naples, and so they all come back to England as a three. And when they came back, Emma was pregnant with twins from Nelson. Now, she had to hide this from the public because they were not as enamoured with her being with him as they were with just sort of her.
Yep.
And they were little, you know, the society particularly, you know, the common folk loved her and all that, but society looked down on her. They said she got a common accent. So this is the Lancastrian accents. This is why I don't know whether later on she changes a bit. I'm not sure.
I love that. I've now got Gracie Fields in my head, like her voice all the way through Emma Hamilton's.
Can you
story.
Do that for us?
No, not on my head.
All right. Whew, okay. She's not a performing seal, gang.
No.
Oh, what a shame.
But if you want to know, look up Gracie Fields. Try and find a clip of Gracie Fields. Even when she's singing, she's pretty broad Lancastrian. So Emma might not be quite as broad as that. But yeah, well,
let's pretend
fabulous
she is.
Idea. Let's go with that.
Let's pretend she is. So of course, you know, being pregnant in a out of wedlock.
Yep.
With the hero of the nation. It's messy. So they keep it under their hats a little bit as much as they can. They write to each other in code about her pregnancy, which is rather sweet.
Oh.
And then they talk about the twins and the children being born to his friend Thompson.
Okay.
After the twins arrive, but only one child survives. And this is... assuming that people are kind of not happy or not believing that Nelson is with this woman of very common birth.
Yeah.
They call their daughter Horatia.
Yeah.
So this is like a seal of approval. Seal of ownership.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And it's
not a good name. In any circumstance, Horatia is not a... I don't think it's a fabulous name.
No.
But also that whole thing of, let's just take a man's name and put "ah" on the end. And
yeah.
No. I don't...
Poor Nigella Lawson.
Anyway. Yeah.
we've got Horatia, and there's, I believe it was a boy, the other one, although why I believe that now I can't remember. Anyway, so when she calls her Horatia, this is almost signing a contract with the public going, he's mine.
Yeah.
Back off, ladies. But also then marking herself as being, oh, she definitely is the mistress sort of thing.
Right.
Now, Horatia was given to a nurse, a wet nurse nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is they put out... Now, this is the thing, is they've called her Horatia, but they've also really wanted to play down the fact that she is their kid. I know, it's a bit mad. It's a bit mad. So they put the word out in society that the baby was born several months before she actually was. And
right. This
gives them an alibi because on that day, Emma was on a trip abroad
without
Nelson. So they could be like, oh, no. And they give a fake backstory. They say that she was a sailor's orphan daughter. The sailor was called Thompson, one of Nelson's crew.
Yeah.
And that Nelson
just
and Emma...
taken her on.
Yeah, that they've adopted her as their godparents, but also sort of parents. And when they give her to a wet nurse, they say to the wet nurse, she's already a few weeks old. I suspect the wet nurse would probably know.
Yeah.
And that the mother died in childbirth. So
right.
And they even double down on this lie by christening her Horatia Nelson Thompson, which is the name of the supposed deceased parents.
Yeah.
Now, remember this, because we're going to come back to how Horatia views her relationship with her parents a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
So they're back in London. William is in his 70s. Emma's only in her 30s. She is still partying up a storm. Nelson is... to get a little bit jealous as well about the parties she had, because coming to these parties was the Prince Regent, future George IV.
Yep.
And he was a bit of a player.
Yeah.
And Nelson obviously hadn't been able to put a ring on it. So she's still theoretically up for grabs. Well, I mean, she's married to William. But he'll
be available.
He can't put a ring on it because his wife won't give him a divorce and he's away a lot. So he gets very jealous by these parties that the Prince Regent comes from. Now, he's completely estranged from his wife by this point. He tells Emma to buy a house for them, which is Merton Place.
Oh, yeah.
In Surrey.
Yep.
Near Wimbledon. And she starts gradually getting accepted by society a bit more, so this is good.
Mm-hmm.
William dies in 1803, and Emma moves their 4-year-old daughter, Horatia.
Yep.
Well, she doesn't really move her into Merton Place. She invites Horatia there quite a lot.
Right.
So she's not a permanent resident there, but she does come back and forth. She's not usually present for parties and things, but she sort of comes to the house. And they both still keep on with this story that she's the adopted daughter of this Thompson couple.
Okay.
Now, 1803, they move in here. I'm sure you know what's on the horizon. Uh-huh. Anyone who knows their dates will know 1805.
Yeah.
So we're going to come crashing down because Nelson sets sail to Trafalgar and with a very unexpectedly dies during the battle. Now, we as guys, we know the story of Nelson's death like the back of our hands, but he takes several hours to die. So he's not killed outright. He's shot. He's wounded. The surgeon takes one look at him and is like, ooh, yikes. So he's got time to kind of put his affairs in order and have a bit of a think, basically.
Yeah.
Word doesn't arrive back to the UK for a little while because it takes a while in those times to get word back.
Yep.
And when Emma is told, she collapses and then she stays in bed for weeks and she never really gets over his death.
Yeah.
Which is quite tragic.
Yeah.
Hardy, who was captain of the Victory, later when he comes back, brings her some of his things, including a lock of hair cut as he was dying,
uh-huh,
and his watch, which is given to Horatia. But she's also told that Nelson had, while he was lying, dying, he included an addition to his will. And he'd, actually, sorry, I lie, it wasn't as he was dying. It was just before he went into battle.
Okay.
He was seeing the ships on the horizon. We know this about Nelson, is that he had some kind of premonition the night before he went into battle he was going to die.
Yeah.
And he wrote a prayer in his prayer book.
But I kind of think, like, sailing is quite a dangerous thing back then. Yeah. Sailing battles even more so. If you didn't consider the possibility you were going to die the next day, you'd be
That's very true. But something about this particular battle makes him just think twice. And he writes this prayer, and then he writes on that very day, an addition. And I'm going to read you what he writes in it.
Yeah.
I leave Emma, Lady Hamilton, a legacy to my king and country that they will give her an ample provision to maintain her rank in life. I also leave to the beneficence of my country my adopted daughter, Horatia Nelson Thompson,
mm-hmm,
and I desire she will use in future the name of Nelson only. These are the only favours I ask of my king and country at this moment when I'm going to fight their battle. And he also leaves two letters, one for Emma and one for Horatia. And in Horatia's one, he says, receive, my dearest Horatia, the affectionate parental blessing of your father, Nelson. So this will is pretty clear. He wants the country to take care of Emma as if she were his wife, the wife of a naval vice admiral.
Yep.
This doesn't happen.
No.
She and their daughter are not even allowed his funeral. And what is really intriguing is that his brother and sisters get payouts. His brother gets the equivalent of about £100 million in today's money.
Wow. From the nation?
From the nation.
Yeah.
And then they all turn their back on her. They knew she was there. They'd met her. They'd parted with her.
Yeah.
They all turn their back on her.
Yeah.
Go on.
I was going to say, do they go and stay with her the night before the funeral? There's something like she's...
Is there?
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know.
His family and her are together somewhere in the run-up to the funeral.
That's nice. Then
they all go to the funeral and she doesn't. I don't think
any women went to the funeral. Maybe his sisters did, but for the most part, as far as I was aware, it was only men. Maybe his sisters did. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But do you want to have a guess who gets his Navy pension? You might know this.
Clearly I don't. I'm just running through in my head the possible candidates for this. There's Horatia. There's clearly Emma. No. Hardy? Hamilton's already died. His wife.
Fanny.
Of course, because they're still married.
Long estranged, so, but still married. Yeah. So she gets his Navy pension.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Nelson becomes...
maybe made it worthwhile hanging on in there.
Well, quite. Mm. Maybe she knew that. So Nelson's sort of transformed into this perfect hero.
Yeah.
That has never put a foot wrong in his life, is the most just angelic, you know, angels singing kind of British hero. There's one little fly in that ointment, and that's having a mistress and a child.
Yeah,
with
doesn't
her.
Fit.
So Emma and Horatia are kind of just, don't talk about them, shove them under the carpet.
Yeah.
And the only thing that Emma and Horatia get are that lock of hair and that watch. That's all they get.
Yeah.
And the letters. Although she did get to keep Merton Place.
Okay.
Partly because she'd sort of bought it, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he might have given her money for it, but still, you know, she bought it.
Yep.
But Emma was convinced that she was going to get something.
Mm-hmm.
And she kept petitioning Parliament. She kept showing the will. They kept rejecting her. And she wanted to keep in. She's met the Prince Regent, all these parties. And she's like, he's my in. He's going to be king. He's going to be able to step in. He'll sort it out. Yeah. And so she keeps him sweet, you know.
Yeah.
And then some letters surface of Nelson's criticising the prince.
And we know he likes, you know, he's a tolerant man.
He does not take criticism well. as evidenced by a variety of different anecdotes. But because she still believes she's going to get this money, she keeps spending and maintaining her lifestyle, and she gets massively into debt.
Yeah.
To the point that the only thing she has to her name, which is Merton Place, she has to sell it.
Right.
Horatia comes to live with her permanently because there's no longer any money for a governess or any kind of essentially childcare.
Yep.
And Emma, again, knows that the way out of any unsuitable situation for her daughter is going to be education.
Yeah.
So she educates herself, educates Horatia by herself. She's aware of that currency. But gradually, as things get tougher and tougher, Emma turns to drink and eventually gambling as well.
Oh.
One of Nelson's sisters offers Horatia somewhere to stay,
mm-hmm.
but doesn't extend that offer to Emma.
Right.
And Horatia, by this point, even though she doesn't believe Emma's her real mother, she believes that she's an adopted mother.
Yeah.
Or slash godmother. It seems it's a bit weird. Horatia still turns it down.
Okay. To stay with Emma.
Stay with Emma.
Yeah.
And Emma, so even though by now, obviously Emma's lost everything, it doesn't matter whether she tells her the story, the truth about her, their relationship. Emma maintains that lie that she is her adopted mother only, which is intriguing. And I don't know why that is, but I wonder if it's because she's sort of thinking, if I do manage to get my status back again, we need to kind of keep that pretense up, because if I do manage to get my status back, I can't scupper it by...
Yeah, or maybe there's more chance of getting that status back if she doesn't publicly include Horatia in it.
Yeah, that's my best guess. I don't know why, but that would be my guess about it. And sadly, she ends up in debtor's prison. In fact, both of them do at one point. Her friends bail her out. She's still got friends. Now, a lot of them have kind of deserted her, really, like Nelson's family. But she has got friends left. They bail her out. She ends back up there again. They bail her out a second time. And at this point, she has to sort of escape her debts. And she runs off to Calais in France with Horatia in tow.
Yep.
And in 1815, believe on her daughter's 14th birthday, she dies of jaundice.
Oh.
She's not yet 50. She's almost 50, but not quite.
Yeah.
And she's buried in Calais, which is where she is to this very day.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting when you think they were fighting Napoleon.
Yes.
And she dies in 1815, which is the Battle of...
Waterloo!
So we're still at war with the French, but she's over
Calais. In France,
So that's the end of Emma. But I feel like even though this episode's about Emma, I want to finish Horatia's story.
Yeah.
Because they're so interlinked. Because,
what next?
So what happens to her? Well... she has to get out of France. We're still at war with France. And if the French realise who she was, it could be a real issue. So I don't quite know how she and Emma have managed so far. Maybe they don't care. I don't know. But she's like, I'm on my own now. I've got to get out. So she manages to contact some old friends of Nelson's. And they are able to smuggle her home. They have to shave her head and dress her up as a boy.
Right.
So that no one will spot her. And she then goes to live with Nelson's sister and brother-in-law. So the abject poverty that she had with her mother is over. But the future is still not easy.
Yeah.
Because they treat her well, but not really as a member of the family. More as sort of member of staff. She has to housekeep for them at one point. And I think there's a little bit of sort of governess duties going on and all of this. And also she can't inherit any of her father's money or land or titles because she's illegitimate.
Yeah.
And also, in theory, an adopted child of someone completely different.
Yeah.
So William... Nelson's brother had done very nicely out of his death, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
He had got all of his property and lands, and they had, I find this completely mad, but he'd been given the title of Earl as a way to honour Nelson. I don't feel like that's how it works, but I don't know. Your brother did something amazing, therefore you should get a title on his behalf. It seems mad to me.
Yes, but if you think about a world where titles are handed down in a family, and a family is a more coherent thing, more important thing than ability,
then
it might make slightly more sense. But I agree, that is bonkers.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
But even with all of that,
and
having done very nicely out of it, he sees no reason at all why he should help out Horatia or sort anything out for her at all.
Right.
So there ain't nothing happening there.
Yep.
But life does get better for her when she meets a member of the clergy,
mm-hmm.
A guy called Philip Ward. and she marries him.
Okay.
And it seems like a really happy marriage. They move to Norfolk, which is where Nelson himself grew up, of course.
Yeah.
They have 10 kids.
Okay.
So something's working in that department.
Yep.
she had a very good social life. She worked with lots of charities and with friends of her father and things like that. And gradually, around sort of around the same time as Nelson's column is erected. How tall is Nelson's column? Don't care.
About that high.
about that high, exactly. Public opinion. All this is happening in public. The public are kind of thinking, maybe she and Emma were a bit hard done by.
Yeah.
And they look at his will and all of this, and the public opinion changes about her father's last wishes, last will mm-hmm. addition, whatever you want to call it, really. And the public club together, and they raise a chunk of money. It's not a huge chunk of money, but it's a chunk of money.
Yeah.
And then Queen Victoria steps in as well.
Okay.
And Queen Victoria grants a yearly pension to be paid to Horatia's daughters.
Right.
The rest of the money that the public raise is to be split. Well, I think I have a feeling they ask Horatia what they want what they should do with it. And she asks for it to be split between her three sons who are doing military service, one of which, name fans, is called Marmaduke.
Whey!
Which I'm loving.
Yes.
And I think that's really sweet because she could very easily have gone, I'm going to have all the money.
Yeah.
I didn't get anything from my dad. But she doesn't. She's like, no, I want my kids to be looked after. And she dies at the age of 80 with a lineage that goes through till today.
Fabulous.
Her gravestone reads, the beloved daughter of Vice Admiral Lord Nelson.
Hooray!
And she is buried in Pinner. However, the only little thing that I think is left to pick up, what were her thoughts about her parents?
Yeah.
Because, of course, they told her from the get-go that they were not her real parents. They were her, well, they sort of said adopted as godparents. So whether that's actual adoption, which it doesn't seem like it because she never lived with them permanently, anything like that. But
there's also, like, there's lots of people who are wards around then. Is a very common thing. And so they haven't done that.
Yeah.
They could, there's lots of words they could use.
Yeah. So, but Nelson very particularly uses the word adopted.
Yeah.
And most of her life, she did not believe that Nelson and Emma were her parents.
Okay.
She'd been told she was adopted. She had no reason to disbelieve that.
Yeah.
And eventually enough evidence piles up that she finally comes round to the understanding that Nelson was her father.
Yeah.
But she never, ever agrees that Emma was her mother. Which I think is really sad, but also really understandable. Because you've been told a million different things.
Yeah.
And you don't know what to believe. So why wouldn't you believe what you were first told?
And I guess also, so she's stuck by Emma, but she saw Emma in her declining years rather than her good years, as it were, maybe. So, I mean, she owed her start in life in terms of education and whatever, but also it might,
maybe
you might not rush to go, yeah, that's my mum.
Yeah. Yeah. She's the person who brought me up and this, that and the other, but she never, ever accepted it, which is sad, but interesting. So that is the story.
I mean, it's weird that also, like, if you go, Nelson, he was my dad. And the person he was with, no, she wasn't. No, so there must have been someone else. You know, then it goes, okay, so Nelson was having an affair outside his affair. He was having another affair with this mystical Thompson woman. It doesn't reflect well on, but to choose that,
anyone, really,
rather than go for Emma.
But the poor girl, I mean, what a thing. And I'm just glad that she didn't have the same end that her mother had. You know, her mother started out, well, obviously initially quite poor, but, you know, her young life was exciting and fame and
burnt brightly.
Love, but a lot of heartbreak and terrible men. But, you know, exactly. And the end was sad and tragic. And with Horatia, it seems like it's the other way around. The start is sad, tragic, you know, mired in confusion and disbelief. But seems to end happily and with lots of love and care and a family that adore her. And
good.
The circle is closed.
Hurrah.
So there we go. So that's why I called it the perfect story.
Yeah.
Because it's got everything you want in there.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, pets. Not everything you want, pets? Because realistic pets, there were no pets.
But they probably did. They probably did have a dog. Did have pets. I'm sure they did.
But I mean, if it's the perfect story, I guess Emma would...
Pirates. No.
Have... Not pirates.
More food.
Emma would have pirates, yes. No. But Emma would have a good ending, you know?
A deathbed redemption scene. Or
well, not even that. Just
a,
you know, a happy ending to her life. Or whatever. But
yeah.
Or they lived happily ever after. But that's too twee, isn't it?
Yeah.
A bit of the anyway, but it's a story that's got all the elements. And so hopefully, if anyone was thinking, oh, Emma Hamilton, yeah, she's the mistress that, you know, had it away with Nelson, that you see there's so much more to her. And yeah. What a rich, like anyone, really. I mean, yeah. Maybe not everyone's quite.
No, there are
but...
some people that you dig into and you go, oh, this would be interesting. You go, no. No, it's not.
Oh, for 20 years, he just sat there. Lovely. Okay, fine. Like Charles Greville, the rather dull guy that she marries. Doesn't marry, sorry. But yeah.
But he improved her story no end with his despicable act.
Yes, but not with any intention to do so.
No.
The intention was just to rid himself of a problem.
Yeah. Good riddance to him.
Yeah. Good riddance to him indeed. And yay for William Hamilton.
Yes, absolutely. And on Nelson's memorial in St. Paul's.
Yeah.
I'm trying to now remember what the thing is, but there is something on the so it was designed by Flaxman as a sculptor, who was incredibly inspired by the vases that Hamilton was bringing back from Italy.
Right.
So there is a sort of stylistic... So
of course, there's two... So in St. Paul's Cathedral, which, gang, let me tell you, is scarily close to Christopher Wren territory.
Once again, I didn't mention it. Upstairs.
Your intention. The upstairs one.
Upstairs one.
For St. Paul's Cathedral, if someone hasn't been before, on the main floor of the cathedral are memorials to people, but they're buried in the crypt. So you often will have two. You'll have your crypt one, which I have to say, Nelson's resting spot is, I mean, it's the most beautiful resting spot I've ever seen. But his memorial is upstairs.
Yeah.
And
the statue of him standing kind of with a seasick lion. Yeah. And small boys and things. That was by Flaxman. And so one of the things we remember Hamilton for, apart from this story, is that he brought a whole load of vases and things which are now in the British Museum, and the sort of the Portland vase was seen as being this most beautiful Italian thing from antiquity and blah blah blah, and it inspires a whole load of people, including Flaxman.
Right. Oh, well,
so there is a nice little circular thing.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Yeah, and my favourite bit on that memorial is the seasick lion, because Nelson apparently suffered from seasickness throughout his entire career.
Yeah.
So the lion's sort of sitting there going, in the corner. So before this descends into mayhem,
let's...
podcast pedestal.
Ah, okay.
What are you picking? We can't pick Nelson, can we?
No.
We can't pick like Nelson, them meeting, because obviously...
Yeah. Yeah, what are we going for, the pivotal moment or our favourite moment? Because those are two different things this week, I think. Mm.
What do you reckon? Pivotal or favourite? I think...
I quite like... Well, I think Hamilton deserves a big thumbs up.
Yes.
So, in a way, that the point when... Before Emma meets Nelson, when she seems to be relatively kind of happily married to Hamilton, I think that might be a little sort of golden lull in a tempestuous life.
Yeah,
and I think that's
so. You're going for your favorite thing.
I'm gonna go. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. Oh, I don't know.
And do you know what it makes me think of? And I don't know why I make this link. When the Queen and Prince Philip were first married and they lived in Malta for a bit.
My husband and I.
And I was the wife of a Navy officer, and I got to live a normal life, and it was lovely, and we entertained, and we went for picnics, and it was marvellous. And I get the same feeling of just being able to enjoy life.
Yeah.
In that little moment, and also in the sunshine.
Yeah, I like that. Oh, you're going to win with that, aren't you? Okay.
Well, I'm overdue.
No, you are, to be fair. My favourite bit is where she rushes towards him on the deck and collapses onto him in a rather dramatic... I'm allowed that, because that is Nelson, isn't it? That's her seeing.
Yeah.
I sort of just gone back.
But he's not the active part of that scene.
He's not. I just love this idea of her with a cracking rack. Whee! Yeah. And just sort of clad in diaphanous chiffon or whatever, just like pounding across the deck of a ship and then collapsing completely on top of him. I'm gonna go for that, for Emma fainting on top of Nelson on board of his on his deck. Careful how you say that.
Okay.
Yeah. There we go. That's your podcast pedestal for this week, gang. Woohoo!
And there you have it for this week, lovely folk. Thank you so much for coming along and listening. I absolutely love Emma Hamilton. I've had, quite a lot of occasions in my guiding career where she's popped up and I get to talk about her. And I always think it's fascinating because people think they know her and they think that they know that she was a mistress, and they don't always know how complex she was and all the other stuff that went on in her life, and the fact that, you know, she ended up as mistress to one of the most famous men in the world at the time. Just, I don't know. It took some doing to kind of get to from the rags to riches story that you just heard. So I really like her. But let us know, have you come across Emma Hamilton before? Did you know her story? Is this new to you? What are your thoughts? Do you think she is worthy of a place at the top of kind of history's most notable women? Do you think her reputation as a famous mistress is valid, or has this made you kind of rethink your opinion of her a little bit? I hope it's given you a bit of food for thought, because I think she's fantastic. Anyway, from us for this week, that is it. Thank you so much for coming along. We will see you again next week when we've got more fun for you. But in the meantime, stay safe, stay well. We love you lots. Bye.